You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
The Literature Corner.
Just, I don't know. I don't like that one, man. It just feels too abrupt. You know what I mean? Like a full stop.
What do you have in mind, Eusebius?
The Literature Corner. Just something that has a little bit more life beyond 1 second.
Okay.
Literature Corner.
You must talk to your voiceover people.
I tried by deconstructing them on air, but no one's listening upstairs. The voice you're hearing, of course, is the familiar voice of broadcaster and literature ambassador, as I think of her, Karabo Kholeng. How's it, Karabo? How are you?
Hi, Eusebius. Hi, everyone. I'm good, thanks. I'm really good.
Thank you so much for getting out of bed just for us.
It's always a pleasure. But radio doesn't feel like an effort, you
It's
know?
Not an effort, yeah. eh?
It makes you feel connected. You feel like you're part of a community.
It's such a beautiful medium. Mm. That's why we both love it so much. I am so excited about the genre of writing you want to talk about today. I'm going to make a renewed effort to get into it after just reading Karabo's notes that you sent me earlier this week for the themes we're going to explore. Tell our listeners what we're focusing on.
We're focusing on horror as a genre. What I find fascinating about it is that it speaks to our deepest fears. Mm. You know, when you think about literature, most people think romance, they think about history. But when you talk to horror, some people do shudder, you know, because fear is a real thing. But, you know, when the topic of horror fiction is brought about, the idea is that it's gruesome and all about psychological manipulation. But, you know, this varies from person to person. But the thing is with horror fiction specifically is that it actually helps us to cope. You know what? Yeah. For example, you know, you can face your fears. You know, most of us know that childhood is not a safe time. It's a very scary time. Mm. And in changing times, children don't have it easy, and their survival is always at stake. So they don't have any power over anything, right? You know, they don't choose when to eat. They don't choose what would make them safe. You know, so they don't even get to pick their own clothes. Mm. So when things happen to grown-ups around children, this lack of safety actually upsets them. So dealing with that through the genre of horror and helping them to sort of resolve those fears, it's an interesting tool to work with. But as well, you don't want to mess the child up. I mean, I used to love reading horror in my teens, which is also a very interesting time of development that I'll touch on later. But another thing about horror as well is that it's empowering. The reason why it's empowering is because experiencing horror is a way to find catharsis. Now, in many times we experience that relief after walking out of a horror movie or when you close that book, you know, then you feel like, okay, you know, the ghost is gone. Everything is back to normal. It's all okay.
Yeah.
Another thing I want to discuss as well is about African horror. Because when you think about sort of, I don't like it when we call mainstream, because mainstream is always West. So we always locate ourselves as the other. Is that African horror has got a very long history.
I didn't know that.
It does.
I didn't know that. You see, thanks for educating me, because I always think like African writers, we keep reducing African literature to like realist stuff. Mm. As if we can't do escapism and these interesting emotions like fear that we can place, you know, and write different genres.
But think about it.
Because I thought you were going to come and talk only about Stephen King.
No. Think about it. As a storytelling species, you know, you have stories around the fireside and, you know, as also teaching about values, how to help kids stay safe. The grandmother would tell, you know, scary stories that would teach you, you know, you must always listen to what your mother says. Otherwise, the giant is going to come and get you, you know, and also horror
that's
brings
true yeah. actually that's very true
yeah. yeah and horror also brings people together. We find that kind of safety because, you know, we can manage the fear better if we're going through it together.
I'm trying to remember this word that my grandmother had, which was, you know, the very few moments when Xhosa words made a cameo appearance at home as a kid, when there was lightning like a big bird and you get all scared as well until the lightning is over.
Yeah. No, definitely. Well, I'd like people to also call in and share their experiences with horror. I'm going to talk about mine, especially during my teen years, because it was a very problematic time for me in my life. And I found that horror was a way that I could escape and also find that resolution at the end of the story.
Okay, so give us a call. If you're into horror as a literary genre, and already people are calling, tell us who are your favorite writers, interesting stories. And I love what Karabo is saying. You know, these things don't just have to live in between books where a million have been sold in the New York Times bestseller. We've got our own traditions here in South Africa, on the continent, and it could be the oral tradition. What are some horror stories that you remember as a child? Which authors have you enjoyed? Share with us on 011-883-0702 in Joburg and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. Let's, at the risk of being seized dolly, let's talk about your teenage years. Because I find it so fascinating that you are prefacing this by saying, actually, this is not just fun, but often a lot of genres that are fun are really an important part of our emotional and social development.
Because it gets real. You know, also being female is very interesting with those, the teenage years. When girls enter puberty, there are a lot of myths around that, that you'd be, you tend to be prone to demonic possession. So there's always a fight between good and bad, good and evil that is located on the female body, you know. And There's the story called The Crucible, for example, and there are many stories throughout the African continent as well where girls tend to be possessed or they become manic over things like exams. But that speaks to that lack of safety that you experience as a young girl when you become a woman. And that is when I was experiencing a little bit of isolation because I was growing up in exile. So I was the sort of the outsider kid, but in the boarding house. And my parents lived in a village, so there were also always scary stories there. But being an outsider, I found a lot of joy in the story about Carrie, the Stephen King story, where this girl is bullied to pieces, and then she becomes a pyron where she can make fire, ends up burning everyone down. So I got a sense that if I could tune into that side, you know, where I could strike fear into people's hearts, then they wouldn't bully me. So in a way, it's almost as if I was asking to be possessed, but obviously I wasn't. But I found that, horror was a great place for me to escape from my reality. And it helped me to realize that things could get a lot worse. You know,
I didn't know Stephen King was that interesting. I haven't read one single Stephen King book.
Oh, it'll change your life.
Not one.
You have to. I remember reading Pet Sematary as well. I had a cat at home. And with the Pet Sematary, the pets are buried at an old Indian or Native American burial ground. So they become possessed by evil spirits. So it's basically pet zombies that come back to get you, you know? So I started looking at my cat very strangely after reading that one. I was like, oh, no, man. But yeah, I think horror is just one of those things. You know, it plays into your deepest fears. And because we also live in a very, you know, we've got a Calvinistic hangover.
Yes.
You know, as South Africans. A lot of, you know, that stuff to do with the devil, the fear of the unknown more than anything. And the idea that we don't have it all in control, I think that's what makes people feel uncomfortable, because that lack of control.
That's probably a very important part of the toolkit of horror writers, right? I want to unpack more of what you're saying, but let's go to the lines. We've got Francho who's called us. How's it, Francho?
How are you?
I'm scared. How are you?
I don't watch a horror movie unless my wife is there, and she knows it. But when I was little, I used to read it a lot, and I was 10 years old when I read Wilbur Smith's Cry Wolf. And then after that, my brother was reading Dean Koontz and Stephen King. He said, no, try this book. So I took the one book from Dean Koontz, and halfway through the book, like, the thing scared the hell out of me, because they had to draw the signs in the sand, and then the creatures came alive, and some guy had to catch them or whatever. But the dialogue was just nothing compared to Wilbur Smith. It was, he said, she said. And I thought, okay, no way. Let me go back to old Wilbur and stick to him until today. And I've read all his stuff, and but now we're married. So probably about 8 years ago, I said to her, okay, now I'm empty. I've got nothing to read. She said, no, because she's got a parents, the whole upstairs room has been made into a library, and it's all her and her brother and sister's books growing up, and they old and other, it's just books. And she said, no, she loves the fantasy. I must try that. And all the horror. I said, no, she stuck a book in my hand. It's called Balgariad.
Mm.
Oh, wow. I like other writers again.
Ah, that's
but
fantastic.
No, I'm not going back to scary stuff. I'm sorry about that. My wife can't read with me.
A grown-up man like you, you're scared of the spooky things.
He sounds like he's very scared. So let's talk about some of the other writers in this genre. I mean, you were talking about one of the cathartic elements of an emotion like fear being overcome by the end of the movie or the book. Are any of these horror writers bastards who don't have that kind of resolution that leaves you hanging with that kind of emotion?
I find that with a lot of African horror writing that happens, where it ends and it's not done. There's a story that I read a few years ago about, and it's got a lot of mythology, and I think a lot of people who are aware of the African tradition will be familiar with this. So you have this couple, a newlywed couple, and they decide to start a family. So while the woman is expecting, they go and visit the village, and she decides that she's going to help to chop the onions in preparation for dinner, and the moon is full. And the elder women are like, don't do that. Do not chop anything while the moon is full. It's gonna be bad luck for your child. And she's like, ah, you know, she dismisses it because she's westernized. She lives in the modern world. She's not gonna listen to these old wives' tales. Anyway, the pregnancy is successful. It goes well. She gives birth to the baby. And when the baby comes out, it's got a split tongue.
Yeah.
And then it ends there. Sorry. You see, I've even lost my headphones.
Yeah, things are happening in the studio.
Yeah. So it ends there and you're like, oh my goodness. So you do find stories like that just leave you.
That's wonderful.
And there are no answers and you just kind of have to sit with your fear. And sometimes also part of healing is that you have to sit with those emotions, not necessarily run away from them. And also to understand that things don't always end well.
Yes.
And you have to deal with it.
But it sounds to me like we haven't been giving horror writing, unless I'm just not reading enough Karaba, which is very possible, we haven't been giving them the love that they deserve as a genre.
Well, not here in Southern Africa, but Nigeria's got a rich, rich, rich history of horror writing.
But I mean, I'm talking both about, both doing justice to those writers for brilliant creativity. But also, if there's so much commentary on the human condition on those stories, I'm thinking to myself, the kind of authors you're talking about, I cannot imagine them, you know, winning the Sunday Times Berry What Fiction Prize, because we think it has to be reserved for really earnest social realism.
Yeah, I think it's not fashionable right now. Mm. And that's why I wanted to have this conversation, in the hopes that maybe this might start to change that. I think we're still a society that's grappling with a lot of taboos, and we've got, you know, a lot more immediate priorities that we have to deal with as a society. So I suppose some people would say, you know, if you're talented, you know, why are you going to indulge yourself in dealing with things like horror when in South Africa people experience horrific, you know, experiences all the time. But when I speak about horror, I don't speak about, you know, the violence and terrorism and that. I'm talking about the deeply psychological, that sense of loss of control. And also speaking to a world that is not one that we can see. You know, are we alone? Are we not alone? It's some deep, deep existential stuff that goes with that. And I think, yeah, it does. I don't think that it's really easy, because, you know, you have to create a sense of foreboding, you know, and you have to be able to tie up the story at the end. So I don't know whether, you know, horror writers would have to be scared in order to write, you know, where they'd find the inspiration from. But I think there's a lot that we can take from our cultural traditions and blend them with the modern experience.
Absolutely.
To create some interesting stuff.
Hello, Simon.
Hi, hi. You see this?
Yeah, bro.
Yeah, it's obvious. You know, it's I've watched movies. There's one movie that I've watched some years back, I think early 90s, Needful Things. I can't remember the author. I tried to refresh it. Needful Things, it was sort of this shop that, you know, sells everything. You know, you come there, you water filter.
It's Stephen King.
Then you know, it's like all these doomsday paraphernalia. You know, your water filter, your mirror or anything. And then once you buy that, you take it home. I'm telling you, that community was turned upside down. Because the owner, when you buy it, you look the other way, smile a little. you know, stick a needle in that thing, I'm telling you, turn that community upside down.
Yeah, needful things.
It's based on a Stephen King novel.
Yeah.
What's your guest name again?
It's Karabo.
Yeah, Karabo. You know what? Yeah, I just found that people who write horror, you know, those who write horror movies and all that. I think, guys, you come across as a nice person, but you got deep-seated issues, man. Because your brain, you will find that no. Is it a normal person that did this?
Karabo, what do you make of that?
You know what I think it is also. We're a religious country. You know, and so people want to stay away from that. You know, there are people who will tell you that, no, if you're reading horror, you're opening a portal to allow, you know, all the yucky stuff that comes from hell to invade your soul and your consciousness. So I think people are kind of scared of going there. But ironically, it is from that space where you can start to make up those stories that scare the living daylights out of you. But the thing is, there's also something really thrilling about fear. You know, it's got its own way of kind of making you high. But, you know, going back to horror authors, I think we can play a clip from The Shining.
Yes, let's do that. Danielle?
Come with a disclaimer. A friend of mine said, Karabo, you know, you should just come with a disclaimer. We should have said trigger warning. But you see, that's the story of the three little pigs, but you turn it upside down. Yes.
Uzile.
Little pig, let me in, not by the hair of my chinny chin chin. That was the wolf coming in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm speechless.
I want to talk briefly before we wrap up about...
I will go over a couple of minutes. Are you having lunch with your daughter?
I'm having lunch with you.
Oh!
Yeah.
Okay, cool. But you're lucky me.
Anyway, there's a Nigerian fiction writer called, a horror writer called Nuzo Ono. And she put together a list of 10 things that we never knew about African horror stories. The first one, obviously, is not a reference to AIDS, famine, Ebola. Just like Indian horror is not a reference to honor killings or rape. It's a literary genre in its own right and a subgenre of horror that has existed for centuries, as I mentioned, without a formal title, you know, without sort of a formal title for them. She has a book called The Reluctant Dead, which began spearheading the term African horror. And then it also encompasses several horror subgenres like supernatural, psychological, demonic, occultic horror, which is the one that really, I mean, I love getting the chills from that one. And there's also sci-fi horror that we can speak about. Nnedi Okorafor actually, she made it more popular. Unfortunately, like I say, I always keep saying this, South Africa suffers from being parochial, because this work is available in the US, in the UK, you know, where African horror writers are experiencing a lot of popularity. But I don't know. We need to talk to.
I also want to ask you whether the examples on the gender line that you give are exceptional, whether this is male-dominated. But let's take a couple of calls. A lot of people want to chat to you. John, good morning.
Good morning, Jesus. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you for calling in.
Very well, man. Actually, I have a very interesting story. I want to agree with your guest there that, you know, back in 1985, 86, I think, there was what is the CDSM now? It was Radio Sesotho. You know, there's a section where they would just, it was about horror. And people would write about horror. And it was called 32 Cell. You know, you'd sit down and listen to horror stories on radio. And I'm wondering, where did it go to? Because we had such brilliant writing back then that really tells about these stories of, I'm not sure if you know what the Tutela is. Somebody who's dead and then somebody wakes them up again. Now they are living, but they're dead and all that. So it used to be such a scary time, but you'd not want to be, you know, but you'd want to sit around as family. Mm-hmm. Like she said, that it brings people together. You feel more safer together, you know, and nobody wants to go to sleep early after you've listened to this. But it's such a brilliant writing. Now, yeah. I wonder where it is now.
Yeah, we must go dig in the archives.
We must. I think you're onto something, and we've got to dispel that myth or have contestation about it, that we have this weird idea of what can we afford to talk about now? What can we afford to write about now?
Mm.
Without realizing how much injustice we're doing to ourselves, because you can write about the present under any genre.
That's true.
Under any genre.
That's true.
Just like you can have bad social realism, you can also have amazing horror.
Yeah.
You know, here's a tweet, Shay, man. I don't know whether you're going to have to apologize to poor Johan. Johan says, listening to 702 on horror stories while waiting at a cemetery, waiting on the procession. Yes, like.
Oh, sorry.
Askies. But why are you listening to The Wireless by the Graveside, Wena? You sound like you're a scene from a horror movie. Karen, hello. Hello, Karen.
Hi. I wanted to say thank you so, so much for doing a segment on this. I myself am a horror writer, a South African horror writer, and it's really sad to see how many of us horror authors who are South African can only get published in the States and in the UK. Because for some reason, South Africans don't like to look at this kind of thing, which is extremely sad.
Yeah, well, it's thanks to Karabo, not to me. I've got a gap in my own reading range. Tell us your surname and tell us what you've written, Karen.
Yeah.
Okay, my surname is Runge, R-U-N-G-E. I was first published when I was about 21, over 10 years ago. Incidentally, in a South African publication called Something Wicked, which unfortunately wasn't able to sustain itself, but... launched some fantastic horror authors. Myself, Sarah Lotz, Monique Sneyman, Lauren Bukas. Some of these names should ring a bell for people who read books. And I had my first complete solo collection published last year, June, and I've got a novel coming out now in July, both published in the States.
Oh, that's stunning. Is there a title yet for the forthcoming novel?
Yeah, Seeing Double.
Seeing Double.
Yes.
Oh, that is really awesome. Will it be published locally as well, distributed here?
Unfortunately not. That's the whole thing. So the only way South Africans can get hold of our works is to order it off of Amazon or directly through the publishers. Obviously, the ebook versions are always available, but if you want an actual hard copy, you're not going to find it in South African bookstores, which is very, very sad. South African bookstores seem to think that horror belongs to Dean Koontz and Stephen King only. You know, it's very hard to find other names there.
Karen, give us your surname again. Spell it.
It's R-U-N-G-E, Runge.
Okay, Karen Runge. Okay, Seeing Double. Okay, well, I'll buy the e-book. I don't like... getting too many freebies. I know as an author, we want to be bold.
Yeah.
And then we'll talk about your book. Congratulations on it. Who have been some of your own inspirations amongst horror writers?
So many. A big one would be Jack Ketchum. Stephen King called him the scariest man in America. he's a very, very big name. He actually endorsed my first book as well. Who else? Shirley Jackson, absolutely. Shirley Jackson sort of reset horror, and specifically in terms of psychological horror. Joyce Carol Oates, she isn't specifically known for horror, but she does have a lot of horror elements in her stories.
Stunning.
It depends on which level you want to go to, because I'll read anything.
Okay. Well, congratulations on your forthcoming book. And hopefully this conversation can make book distributors think twice about their assumptions about the market locally, Karen. All the best.
I certainly hope so. Thank you.
The Literature Corner.
Yeah, it's great fun. We're talking about horror writing and a huge response to this conversation, which truly delights me. We need to read more. It's amazing. I was just saying to Karabo, we tend to narrow our range of reading as we get older. And it's strange. I read more genres, I read more widely as a kid than I do now.
And I think also as sort of intellects, people who take life seriously, is that we need to find ways to use literature to escape, not necessarily to prove to each other that, you know, we're a bunch of smarty pants. And, you know, I've got a teenager in my house who's raising me because a lot of what she reads, because, you know, nowadays kids, they just download books. So she's not the type that she's looking at her phone, you think she's on social media.
She's a reader.
She's a reader.
Oh, lucky mom. So, that's awesome.
Yeah. So, and she's got, I'm a bankrat. I spook so easily and she finds that hilarious. But I mean, that's actually where I got the inspiration to have this conversation, because it's also being at that age where you're testing your boundaries. You're testing the boundaries to life. And that's why, you know, I guess that horror does become compelling. So I'm also personally going back to that. You know, let me pick that up. Let me read outside my usual scope, because it's about stretching ourselves.
Absolutely.
And as we get older, you need to stretch yourself so that, you know, your brain doesn't atrophy.
We need to become children again.
Yes.
Benedict tweets, UCBS Karen, the author that called in, sounds like that sweet woman you meet at a park, walking her dog and having a lovely conversation about Dandelions. Meanwhile, Kanti. Well, James, I'm going to take James in a second. I'm coming to you in a second there, down there in Stelly's, James. But I wanted to ask you, I mean, we've had a couple of lovely examples in conversation about women writers in the genre. Do men dominate?
I think that they do. But I think that the women who do show up become really exceptional. And I think, you know, it's changing as we move, you know, further into the modern age, if that's even a thing. But, you know, you've got your Anne Rice, who was like the rock star of horror during her time. But now, you know, like I mentioned, Nuzo Ono, she's a very popular horror writer from Nigeria. So I think that women are coming into it. I think we're starting to experience a crossover.
Hello, James. Welcome to the show.
How's it? Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure, yeah. Do you enjoy horror?
Perhaps, but what I wanted to speak about quickly was just a perspective that I came across when I was tutoring anthropology at Stellenbosch University regarding the tokolosh and the social, psychological kind of meaning of that metaphor of the tokolosh, just seeing these oral histories and these horror stories as metaphors for society.
Yeah.
So one of the perspectives that we came across there was in traditional, you know, causal societies, where you've got a focus on clan exogamy and, you know, building the clan's relations with neighboring villages through marriage. And they suggested, and I'd just like to hear what you guys think about it, that the tokolosh came about through a kind of a scapegoat, if you will, for molestation. It's an interesting reading, and I just wanted to hear what you guys thought about it.
Yeah, I know nothing about tokolosh other than the fact that it's the bread and butter of the Daily Sun.
You know, and the tokolosh in your sort of Daily Sun kind of spaces, I have a friend who was a sub-editor there, and she says some of that stuff is true, you know. But using it as a scapegoat for molestation, actually, it makes sense, because I have read stories in that publication where this one woman was saying that, you know, she had been molested by a tokoloshi for years and years and years. So that is something interesting to look into. But yeah, I'm also pretty clueless on that front. So I'm sure our listeners, in 702 and Cape Talk land will school us in that regard.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I wanted to talk a little bit about who reads. I don't know. Do we know who reads horror? Is it something which, you know, like an Ayn Rand novel, you embarrassed that you read the weird ode to capitalism and then you grow up as an adult? Or does everyone enjoy the genre?
I think it's something that younger people enjoy, teenagers. And I think that the reason for that is that they're more likely to explore. I think we get caught up in the day-to-day realities and difficulties that we have to deal with as adults. So those people who are willing to let their imaginations run, I think they're the types to read horror. Mm. I mean, when I leave here, I'm going to go to the bookshop and see what's up there, you know, maybe get something to spook myself.
Okay, well, give us a call. We're going to wrap the conversation in a second. Are there any particular authors that we haven't touched on that you think that are important, that you've read in this particular genre? A lot of your curiosities have been piqued. I'll also read some of your tweets in a second. 011-883-0702 in Joburg and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. As we wrap on the other side of this, our conversation about horror as a writing genre. I'm going to take your call, Harry, in a second. Let's just go shopping a little bit.
The Literature Corner.
Okay, so also, I mean, if you are a fan of this genre, I'd like to know who you think is the greatest horror writer of all time. I've got no clue. This is not a genre that I obviously am familiar with. That's why I'm loving this segment of the show. I feel like a listener rather than the host of today's Literature Corner. Malcolm, hello.
Hello there.
How are you?
I have to say, when I was a youngster of about 15, 16, there was a book I wanted to read on the toilet. It was written by Edgar Allan Poe, who I think was one of the greatest horror writers of all time. I remember reading stories about people being buried alive in coffins, for example. So I was just wondering if your erudite guest has got any comment on my opinion about Poe being so great.
Oh, that is, it's amazing, the coincidence, because you're saying that, and we've also got Harry on the line. How's it, Harry?
Hello, you're serious? Oh,
I think you share Malcolm's love of Edgar Allan Poe.
No, not necessarily. I do like it, but there's a program on TV, SABC 3, called The Following, and that one really, you know, the way that the guy uses Edgar Allan Poe is really frightening, really. But there is another book called Edgar Allan, the other Poe, that shows his humorous side as well, you know.
Okay.
But the previous caller did ask what I wanted to ask.
Oh, that's great stuff. Who else do you read, Malcolm, by the way, or is it just Edgar that you have a childhood memory of?
Well, no, contemporarily, I like reading sort of real horror, and especially in the crime noir books of, you know, recent authors being produced here in South Africa, particularly Roger Smith, who I think writes a kind of a contemporary horror based in the perceived reality of living in South Africa. Yes. It's not sort of imaginative horror, but it's about the real-life horror, the lived horror that many people experience here.
That's interesting. So that sounds like a more literal take on this genre. I've never heard of this guy called Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah, no, he's
but
like
Wikipedia tells me he died when he was 40 in the 18 somethings. Who was he? Do you know him?
He's one of the, I mean, when you're going to speak about horror as a genre in the Western sense, then he's the one that's always mentioned. I mean, he's a classic. He's a classic in that regard. And you know, going back to, was it Malcolm or Harry, where he said he's reading Roger Smith. I've read one of Roger's works, but that's
Malcolm, yeah.
Yeah, that's also, you know, when we're speaking about the literal sense of horror, I'm not too crazy about that. I find it triggering. Isn't that ironic? But when we go into the sort of the deep psychological, you know, things to do with the occult and stuff, I like getting that thrill from there. One of the more modern, because you do have a lot of nonfiction horror, right? And, you know, the jury's out. Is this true? Isn't it true? A big example is that...
I didn't know that. I thought maybe there was a mistaken sub-theme on your prep material you sent me. I was like, what is the distinction between fiction and non-fiction got to do with horror? I thought it was all, like, escaping.
Mm-mm. There's some stories about real spooks in South Africa, for example. And you have the Amityville horror in the US. about that haunted house. And I guess it's called what? Experiential truth?
Mm.
If someone said they went through it and they've got the visible and emotional and behavioral scars, then maybe it did happen. I mean, it's one of those, it's an area that is contested, but I think it's nice to be able to explore that, you know, instead of doing, you know, the day-to-day stuff. We know the day-to-day sort of literature.
No, but I think that's a very important point, and I think it intersects with what Malcolm is talking about, literal horror, is that of course, it's unsurprising that there should be these continuities between, and I say it in heavy scare quotes in this conversation, real life and horror, including like the fictionalized work, because those are our experiences.
They are. There's a popular horror story. Having grown up in both Botswana and South Africa, there are a lot of similarities in the sort of the urban legends that are horror-based. For example, there's a story about a guy who goes to a party, meets a nice girl, they get drunk, and she takes him home to her place, and they do what they need to do, what they want to do. He wakes up in the morning, and her address is actually her grave number, and he wakes up, you know, sleeping on top of her grave, and his clothes are hanging in the chair.
Aye,
whereas he remembered hanging them over the chair, you know? And then there's also the popular story about Vera the ghost. You know, she's the one. And they're different takes on that story, you know, all over the world. But basically, she's the girl who died tragically, and you stop and you give her a lift, and then when you get to where you're supposed to get to, she's disappeared. You know, and it's also about resolving, you know, the fear of the unknown.
Yeah,
you know, yeah. But that story about the dude Hectic. Wakes up on the grave. It's
have you ever tried writing some horror?
You know, I have. I did when I was a lot younger. I remember writing. I wrote a piece, a flash fiction piece on the bus. So basically, it's a really cold winter's day. I'm on the bus going to university, and we stop, we go past a car crash, and then at the next bus stop, a bunch of students get on, right? And one of them goes past me, but I feel this really like a cold gust of wind. But I don't know, I just put it down to the fact that it's winter. You know, West Rand winters.
Is this now for real, or are you in the story?
I'm in the story.
Oh, okay.
I'm in the story. And so this girl goes past me, and she sits down, and we all get to school, and we get off the bus at Solomon Mahlangu House, back then it was Senate House, and we walk in and I pick up the newspaper, right? And it's the late morning edition of The Star. And this girl, she died in that car crash.
Wow.
Early that morning. So I see a picture of her and it's like, no, but she was in the bus with me.
Yo.
Yeah.
Hi. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Thanks. You guys were mentioning the movie The Pet Sematary.
Yes.
You know, there's a whole lot of horror. I'm a horror fan right through. But when I started watching that movie Pet Sematary, I thought, my God, this is what I call horror. I think you also mentioned that you started looking at animals in a different way. I had a dog as well, and it was a bad experience.
What do you mean, but you had a dog? I hasten to ask. You had a dog.
I had, yeah. Well, it passed away, but it's just after I watched the movie. It's, yeah, my relationship with my dog changed dramatically after watching.
I'm scared to ask about this dog.
You must read The Pet Sematary.
It's an incredible one of the movies that will always be one of my all time favorites. I think that's when I realized that Stephen King has it. He's just brilliant, and I just wanted to share my experience with the movie The Pet Sematary.
Thank you so much. And The Pet Sematary.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Andrew.
And it actually has a sequel. The book, there's Pet Sematary 1 and Pet Sematary 2. So, yeah, I think people should go and read it, and you will. You'll start suspecting your pets, eh?
I think on that note, we better leave it there. It's getting all very weird here. I'm so glad my complex has a no pets policy. So we are safe where I'm living. Karabo, you've been stunning. We need to have you on radio full time. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Xavius. And thanks all the listeners. It's lovely to be here. Bye.